I left Wales before I could read or write, so the stories and memories were only in my head, stored for safekeeping, reappearing in my first novel, A Jar Full of Angels, 40 years later. At school in England, reading was my first magical experience, and writing came soon after. I had a wonderful teacher who knew intuitively how much I loved to write stories, and he always gave me extra time to finish my work. I loved this writing time, arm wrapped around my head, small hand trying to keep up with my thoughts. My writing was untidy, but ink spots and smudges never mattered to Mr. Stanley. He was only concerned with what you had to say. Sadly, those things mattered much more to less inspirational teachers later. I lived a semi-nomadic existence after primary school, moving around and living above various pubs in London. There was a round of new schools, so I was forever the new girl. This left me reeling, but hey-ho, I discovered that with a newly sharpened pencil and a Woolworths notebook, I could escape and conjure up worlds anew, rewrite old ones, head off on adventures of my own making. I wrote in secret because I hadn't been blessed with another English teacher of Mr. Stanley's stature. Despite my Welsh roots, I thought that I spoke English until I encountered Miss Clatterthrap, she of the dreaded elocution lessons. My Welsh lilt had accumulated a Wilson twang and a dash of rural Bedfordshire, and this offended the ear of Miss Clatterthrap, who determined to teach me to enunciate and drag myself out of the gutter. I learned another form of English, and to the bafflement of my family, I could now say, "My friend Hortense lives in a nice house in Haringey." My mother was a firefighter in the war and put out fires all over London. At the time, I hated all the moves, but I was being given an experience of many lifestyles and ways of speaking that were invaluable to my writing. Later, I was blessed with an English teacher who had an enormous effect on my writing career. She once gave out a composition title and asked us not to put our names on our work. I wrote with abandon, drafted and redrafted, and was pleased with the result. The following lesson, she handed back our work. "Angela, dear, you have surpassed yourself," she said to one of her favourite pupils. Angela replied, "But it's not my work, Mrs. Bagstock." "Oh, well, Rosaline, this wonderful piece must be yours." "No, Mrs. Bagstock." "Who wrote this composition?" I put up my hand. She froze as she looked over her half-moon glasses. She bristled, adjusted her Hermes scarf, and handed the composition back to me without a word. Mrs. Bagstock isn't her real name. How I would love to tell you. But I expect the frosty old bint is alive and pruning prize-winning roses somewhere in the Cotswolds, doubtless still wearing gloves, in case she comes into contact with the working classes. Oh, Mrs. Bagstock, how you have spurred me on through the years. Every rejection slip conjured up your face in my mind, and on I went doggedly. At the age of 15, I arrived in a convent school, and for several years I was closeted away from the world. Beyond the high walls, teenagers were gyrating to the Rolling Stones, dousing themselves in patchouli oil and smelling of damp Afghan coats. I was shut up inside listening to Val Dunican records. Did I hate it? Oh no, it was pure theatre. Sister Immaculata gave me more material for my books than she will ever know. Her talks on life and sex were wonderful. "No girls are seen swithwills will wear braziers until they are in the final year of school. If the good Lord thought a part was necessary, he wouldn't have invented gravity." Sex education was clear-cut. "No hanky-panky with men until the wedding ring is firmly on your finger. Men are feckless articles and are only after one thing, and it's not your sweets. If Protestant boys who have no self-control whatsoever get over-familiar with ye, wait until you can see the whites of their eyes and then kick out like Delaney's donkey." I began to write in earnest and dreamed that one day I would become a writer, but then making a living got in the way. I still wrote, mainly because without writing I seemed a more shadowy person, a negative of the real me. At one time I thought that publication was the most important thing. Now I know that it is the act of writing that I love. I still feel that heightened excitement when I start a new book, the sharpened pencils, the new exercise book, and new worlds aching to be written.